he steps forward to try to get a better look at these kids. When he does, they both raise their heads up and look at him. And that's when he realizes that their eyes are just solid black. They're not just asking to come in. They're asking you to invite them in.
Mm.
You know, they're saying, just ask us in. Just invite us in. It won't take long.
Oh, God.
It's a very creepy aspect to the whole thing. She comes back out, jumps in that SUV, closing the door, putting the key in the ignition and turning it as she's looking up in the rearview mirror, and there's this kid with solid black eyes staring in the mirror at her. He is sitting in the middle of the back seat directly beside her son.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 7. This time around on the program, we have got an episode that is going to have you on the edge of your seat, my friends, as we examine a bizarre and chilling phenomenon which has emerged in the world of the paranormal over the last few years, with our guest, David Weatherly, author of the book, The Black-Eyed Children. I won't even begin to try and explain to you how odd and weird this black-eyed kids phenomenon is. We have touched on it briefly in the past on the program with our good friend Jason Offutt, but this time around we are going to delve in depth into the BEK enigma. Over the course of this lengthy conversation, we are going to discuss how the BEKs first burst onto the scene of esoterica. We will share with you a thumbnail look at what a black-eyed kid encounter entails. You'll learn some of the truly mind-bending aspects associated with the phenomenon, including strange smells, hypnotic effects, and potential psychic abilities demonstrated by these strange entities. Additionally, we will look at how BEKs compare and contrast with various other paranormal genres, including aliens, ghosts, demons, and men in black. Beyond that, David will also share a number of terrifying and troubling stories of BEK encounters, including a few where folks dared to invite the black-eyed kids into their lives and faced dire consequences. Altogether, it is a comprehensive and compelling conversation which aims to pull the curtain back on the furtive and frightening black-eyed kids phenomenon with accomplished esoteric researcher David Weatherly. For those of you who are unfamiliar with David Weatherly, please allow me to provide you with a little background on him. David Weatherly is a paranormal investigator and author. For over 35 years, he has explored the world of the strange, investigating cases around the country and abroad. He has written and lectured on a diverse range of topics, including cryptozoology, ufology, and hauntings. David has also studied shamanic and magical traditions with elders from numerous cultures, including Europe, Tibet, Native America, and Africa. He has appeared on numerous radio programs, including Darkness Radio, Project White Paper, Haunted South, and Paranormal Live. He is a writer for Intrepid Magazine and is the author of the book, The Black-Eyed Children. His website is www.2crowsparanormal.blogspot.com. Pretty simple, all one word, 2, T-W-O, Crows, Paranormal, .blogspot.com. And you can pick up The Black-Eyed Children at leprechaunpress.com. Check it out. And with all that said, let's get down to business and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on February 19th, 2013. David Weatherly, talking about the Black-Eyed Children on BOA Audio Season 7.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 7. I'm going to warn you right now, we've got a creepy conversation for you coming up, and I cannot wait to dive on into this one. Our guest is David Weatherly. He's the author of the book, The Black-Eyed Children. And chances are, folks who have heard of this or have been anticipating this conversation have already have a chill down their spine, because this is definitely one of the creepiest topics in all of esoterica, and it's sort of emerged from the ether in the last decade or so, and has been growing and growing and considerably weirdness ever since. And this really is a tremendous book. It's outstanding. I read it yesterday and just devoured it because I've kind of kept the black-eyed kids at arm's length, the advice of my friend Jason Offit, because the topic is just so weird and troubling. But finally sat down to read this book and just loved it and learned a lot about the black-eyed kids, and I have a lot of questions about this enigma, so I'm very excited now to be having this conversation with David Weatherly. Welcome to the show, my friend. I cannot wait to dive into this topic.
Tim, it's a real pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure's all mine, my friend. This book, as I said, is tremendous, and I cannot wait to dig into it. It's scary stuff. I'm a little shaken up just thinking about it, and I have a lot of questions about this. But let's start out with the bio, the background. You know, who is David Weatherly? How did you get interested in the paranormal? I know you've been doing this for decades now, 30-plus years. So, you know, tell us a little bit about your evolution as a researcher and how you ended up on these black-eyed kids.
You know, as far as the paranormal goes, I got interested when I was a kid. And ironically, I grew up in a very rural area of North Carolina, though. So there wasn't really anyone around me who was interested in these topics. This is, you know, the 1970s, so you couldn't really talk to people about it. There weren't television shows.
Right.
And, you know, I always say that these things tend to find you if you're destined to be involved with them. And that's kind of what happened to me. I just started seeking out information. And, of course, you know, this is pre-internet. So was able to find a couple of books that really intrigued me, like Von Däniken's Chariots of the Gods and some things associated with that. And then this elderly couple moved in fairly close to us. I started going over and just visiting with the woman, and it turned out that she was a spiritualist. She was, yeah, I joke and say she was probably the only one in the eastern half of North Carolina at that time. You know, I didn't even know what spiritualism was at the time, so I got a real education on that. And she had a broad interest in all types of paranormal topics, you know, psychic phenomena, UFOs, and so forth. So we'd spend time speaking with her, and, you know, one day I went over to visit her, and she's reading Fate magazine. Now, I had never seen this before. This was a little digest-sized magazine that came out back then.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, she showed it to me, and I was like, oh, my God. It was just really eye-opening, because all of a sudden I realized that there were a lot of people out there interested in these topics, a lot of people investigating and writing. So, it's funny because she, you know, she told me, oh, I'll make sure you come back and visit tomorrow. And the next day when I did, she presented me with this huge box, you know, several years of Fate magazine. And she says, I don't need these anymore. Why don't you take them?
Nice.
And, yeah, I was mysteriously sick from school for a while right after that. You know, couldn't get out of my room. So, you know, I just devoured this stuff, Tim. It was, like I said, it was very eye-opening, you know. It introduced me to a lot of different types of phenomena, and also introduced me to the concept of exploring this further. And from the time I was a teenager, that's what I just actively did. You know, I read absolutely everything I could get a hold of, started doing investigations on my own. And, you know, back then you couldn't just walk to someone and ask them about ghost stories or, you know, Bigfoot or anything like that. They'd think you were nuts.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of work to be an investigator back then, because you had to really kind of, you know, gain someone's confidence and find ways to introduce these things in a conversation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I never looked back from then. You know, I've investigated ever since then, and it's been about 35 years at this point, and I love every minute of it.
Then how did this research into the black-eyed kids come about? Because as I said, you know, you predate the black-eyed kids as far as being in the paranormal field. This thing's just sort of sprouted up, you know, towards the start of the millennium, right around then, right?
Has a popular meaning, yes, I do. But, I mean, we can get into some of the history of these things a little bit later. But essentially what happened with my introduction to these beings was that I had heard some of the stories initially in the 90s when the Internet was becoming very popular. People were, you know, setting up chat rooms and forums and things like that. A few stories started to circulate. The most well-known story probably related to the Black Eyed Kids is the story of Brian Bethel, a Texas journalist. And he put his story on the Internet about an encounter with a pair of these kids. It kind of caught people's interest. It really sparked something. Other people started going on and saying, oh my gosh, I've seen something like this, sharing their stories. And, you know, being interested in all aspects of the paranormal, I had read these things and thought, wow, this is kind of weird and kind of creepy and different. But, I didn't have any personal foundation to connect to it. You know, I didn't know whether these things were just some kind of a new urban myth or whether there was something more to it. So I sort of filed it away in my brain and waited, to see what happened with it. Well, yeah. A few years later, I met this gentleman who, was the person that really was the impetus for exploring this further. This was a gentleman that I knew him for a little while. He was a martial artist, a bodybuilder. He was a prison guard, kind of a John Wayne character.
Mm-hmm.
And, his name's Paul. Paul knew about my interest in the paranormal, and he was one of these characters that could not leave it alone. So, I'd see him on a regular basis, and you know the type. It's always a comment. Did you catch a flying saucer this week?
Yeah, it's just busting balls, right? Just busting your chops.
Yeah, all the time, and always with kind of a grin, you know, and I just nailed Bigfoot and this type of thing. But over the years, you learn that those people are often the ones that have something that nags at them on a personal level.
Yeah.
That's what it was with this guy. He caught me one day having lunch, asked if he could join me. And this guy opened up about his story, and it was just absolutely mind-boggling. He, you know, related his account, and it was sort of typical of a lot of these encounters. Now, I can give you Paul's story briefly. He came home from work one afternoon. He lived in a, you know, suburban neighborhood and was in the kitchen fixing himself something to eat. And he hears this knocking, and it's this long, continuous knock. No breaks between it at all. And this is very typical in these accounts. Like many of us would do, he kind of paused and was puzzled for a moment. You know, is that somebody at the door? Why aren't they using the doorbell? All the questions that any of us would ask.
Right.
He goes to the door. He opens the front door, and there's two kids standing there. Now, they're in fairly drab clothing, hoodies, sort of looking down at their shoes. And, you know, they say something to him to the effect of, hey, we just thought we'd, you know, stop by for a visit. And, you know, Paul is, he's a real no BS guy. He's kind of like, no, I think you guys have the wrong place. And the response is to the effect that, well, we'll just come in anyway.
Yeah.
Now, you know, this guy's like 6'3", 6'4". These are two 10-year-old kids. And at the same time, he's a little uneasy. There's something's not right. So he tries to engage these kids. You know, he's running through all the standard things in his head thinking, these kids are too old to be friends of my child. I've never seen these kids in the neighborhood. Because of his profession, he's, you know, he's got a real high level of awareness. So he pays attention to things. And he steps forward to try to get a better look at these kids. When he does, they both raise their heads up and look at him, and that's when he realizes that their eyes are just solid black. Now, let me clarify for people, we're not talking about just the pupil, we're talking about the entire square of the eye. It's all solid, shiny black. That kind of puts him over the edge. He steps back in his house, slams the door, stands against the door for a moment, strides across the room, and he's now pacing in his room, realizing that he's absolutely frightened, and he can't understand why. And then he hears it, this tapping noise. And he turns and looks at his front door, which is one of those front doors that's framed with the glass panels along the side. Staring in one of those panels is the face of one of these kids rapping on the window. So Paul kind of snaps. He goes from being absolutely frightened to being really angry. He darts into his bedroom. He grabs his firearm, which is on the nightstand. He comes back out. He flings the front door open, and there's nothing there. Now, you know, he told me in the moment that he grabbed his firearm because the only thing he could think of was that he wanted to frighten those children the way they had scared him. And now when he opens the door and there's nothing there, he's got this whole other wave of fear that comes over him. He kind of grits his teeth, though, and runs outside. He checks the yard, the street, you know, everywhere, and there's no sign of these kids anywhere. So this account, you know, Paul came to me because he wanted answers. He hadn't been able to explain it in any rational way. He just wanted some level of understanding to, you know what he had encountered. And he honestly hoped that I could give him something that was, you know, well, this is, there's a rational explanation for this. I didn't have a whole lot of answers for him at the time because this was my first encounter with someone who had a direct experience with these children. And it caused me to go back and review the older stories and also to begin to explore the phenomena a bit more, which eventually resulted in the book.
Wow, interesting. At that point, it's pretty amazing because these things go from stories on the internet to you have an actual experiencer, you know, in your midst. Now, how did you get all the stories to put together for the book? And you know, give me a ballpark on how many of these stories you've actually heard.
As far as the accounts themselves, you know, now bear in mind, this was the early 2000s when I met and talked to Paul. So there was no quick leap between, you know, investigating this and putting the book out. It took a long time, actually. You know, the first thing I did was to try to follow up on some of the internet stories. And quite frankly, at the time, you know, there was not much chance of reaching any of those people. You know, some of the stories posted were anonymous. The ones that did have names associated with them, they just didn't respond to communication. I have actually since talked to Brian Bethel, and we can get to his story if you want to. But, you know, so it was sort of a dead end initially, and it took a little bit of time. I sort of put the word out. You know, I was still investigating old school since the internet was still kind of in its infancy in a lot of ways, and, you know, had been able to build a network over the years of people all over the country and abroad, and started putting the word out that, hey, you know, if you hear anything like this, if you meet anybody that's encountered anything like this, you know, please let me know or have them get in touch with me. And, you know, primarily a lot of it was word of mouth and just in my travels, always asking and starting to come up with some stories. And then once the word started getting out, people would hear about me and say, oh, yeah, this guy is collecting, you know, those accounts, get in touch with him. So
right,
it took quite some time. And it was funny because a few years ago, 2010, the end of 2010, I was asked to come on Darkness Radio with Dave Schrader and talk just about the Black Eyed Children. And at that point, I was writing a book that, you know, was encompassing several different things, the Black Eyed Kids included. But after that show, I was just inundated with people saying, you know, relating their accounts and giving me their contact and saying, I've seen something like this. I realized that this was a phenomenon that really was growing at a pretty dramatic pace.
It reminds me of the shadow people.
Yeah, sort of does. And there are similarities. You know, as you saw in the book, it's very strange that these kids actually relate to a lot of different types of phenomena.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Especially, you know, shadow people came up almost at the same time. It's like, what is going on? Is the veil getting thinner and now we're seeing more weird stuff? It's really odd. And what I liked about the book quite a bit, too, is I think I've heard maybe, you know, less than 10 stories about the Black Eyed Kids. Because, like I said, I try to keep it kind of at arm's length. It's really creepy. But having read the book, it really illuminated a whole bunch of stuff that I'd never even heard about with regards to this whole enigma. And I guess the big one, which I think we should talk about, is these odors being reported following the Black Eyed Kid encounter, which is something that I'd never heard about, but it apparently is a fairly prevalent trend, one that we can pretty much connect with this.
Yeah, it's, you know, in the cases I've examined, which you asked me about that earlier, I don't even have a number currently to tell you the truth. I can tell you it's in the hundreds of cases that I've looked at. It's a very high number. Now, granted, you know, there are a portion of those that I determined were just, possible hoaxes, or there wasn't enough information to really follow up, or I couldn't interview the people and so forth. So a lot of those got discarded, but I'd say in the cases I've examined, maybe 30% of the cases, this odor comes up.
Okay.
And, you know, I've talked to some other researchers who say it comes up much more often when they hear these accounts. It's often, you know, described as something rotting or decaying. Occasionally people will say it smells like, you know, rotten eggs or rotten meat. It's purported to be an incredibly foul odor that will not go away immediately. You know, there was a few cases where the people reported that after they had encountered these kids and were overwhelmed by this odor, that they couldn't get rid of it for days, that it would kind of linger on their clothing and, you know, and in the area where these children had shown up. It's kind of curious because it's one of those things that, oddly enough, you can look at this phenomena and find a lot of pieces that relate to different types of, you know, potential explanations. And, of course, with this odor, it's reminiscent of, you know, something demonic or, you know, notoriously undead beings are purported to have this foul odor, you know, the stench of the grave and so forth.
Hmm. Also, Bigfoot.
Oh, that's correct, yes.
Which is, you know, I'm not making the leap that these are somehow connected to Bigfoot, but it's like someone needs to look at the smell aspect of all this, because maybe there's something there we haven't unlocked.
Very possibly.
And what I thought was interesting, you know, the story you told, Paul's story, that's pretty much kind of the textbook black-eyed kid encounter. You know, they show up at your house. Well, we're going to get to that in a minute. But they show up. They knock. They want to come in. They look kind of out of place. You don't notice the black eyes at first. The witnesses, they get kind of hazy in the mind, and they're not sure really what to do, and they feel almost like they're being compelled to let them in. And the kids keep asking to be let in. They're very evasive about what they're going to, about any other answers. So the person will ask them, you know, other questions. Are your parents around? Are you lost? But it's always just, let us in. And then it sort of culminates with, you know, this won't take long, and the person sees their eyes and kind of snaps out of whatever is going on in their mind and shuts the door and freaks out. That's pretty much your textbook black-eyed kid encounter. Just catch folks up to speed, right?
Pretty much, that's correct.
Okay. And the part that I thought was interesting that I learned here from the book is I'd always, and I caught myself even just now when I was doing the textbook experience, I'd always considered it something that just happens to people at their house. But these stories indicate that it's, you know, people are having these encounters at their cars. The kids are trying to get in the car. They're trying to get a ride at businesses. They're trying to get in, you know, the person will close the store, and the black-eyed kids are trying to get in after hours. Same thing that happens. And even one guy in Louisiana in the book who's just walking home, and the black-eyed kid shows up and just tries to get him to walk with him.
That's correct.
So it's interesting. It's just not just happening at homes. It's happening all over the place.
Yeah, there's a wide variety of locations these things have shown up. You know, everywhere from hotel rooms to, you know, there are a few accounts where they've shown up dockside trying to get on someone's boat.
Oh, God.
So it just seems, you know, that there's an opportunistic aspect to this that they take advantage of.
Mm. Yeah, like when your guard's down.
Right.
And you know, I think the whole crux of this phenomenon lies in the whole, like, let us in thing. That's clearly, like, the keystone to the whole mystery, is that they need some kind of invitation to do whatever they're going to do.
That's correct. There are no accounts that I've ever heard of them barging in, you know, forcing themselves in. They always try to gain this invitation. So, you know, they're asking, they're not just asking to come in, they're asking you to invite them in.
Mm.
You know, they're saying, just ask us in. Just invite us in. It won't take long.
Oh, God.
And, it's a very creepy aspect to the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's really weird. It is really weird. And you know, you make the point in the book that I think it's almost semantic in a way, but these aren't necessarily urban legends because we actually, you've talked to people that have experienced this. So it's not just something that is from a friend of a friend that you never can quite pin down who actually had the encounter. You've talked to people that have had this happen to them.
Absolutely.
It's so weird. It's very chilling stuff. It's really, it is really odd.
You know, it's funny too, because one of the things I actually set out to do when I started researching this phenomena was I wanted to, despite sitting down with Paul and hearing his account, I felt like I needed to determine a couple of things. One, whether there were more valid accounts out there. And, two, you know, exactly how old was this phenomenon? I wanted to make sure that there wasn't, that it wasn't a strictly modern creation.
Right.
That had, you know, arisen somehow. So I actually spent a lot of time looking for stories that predated, the internet and television. And, you know, I was able to find some accounts. And even since the book has come out, you know, I've moved on to a lot of other things, but obviously I have a lot of people contact me about these beings. And, you know, the last few months I've been speaking with a gentleman who's a Native American who, you know, has told me that these creatures have been here for a very long time, and his people have tribal legends about these black-eyed children.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, some more of that will be coming out in the near future.
Oh, I hope so. That sounds interesting, because it's part of the oddness of this is, you know, we don't have accounts from like the 1800s or the 1950s or anything. I mean, this ghost stories that go back a long time, and UFO events and Bigfoot events, but, you know, we don't really, as far as I know and as far as I think that you can tell, you know, we don't have accounts of this, these textbook black-eyed kid type encounters happening within.
What?
You know,
actually, Tim, there's an account in the book from 1950.
Oh, okay, yes. I guess I mean in a prevalent way. Do you know what I
right.
mean? This isn't like something that we've heard over and over and over again throughout, you know, written history.
Yeah, but you know what the issue is? The reason is that people, it kind of goes back to semantics again. The term black-eyed kid, BEK is the acronym that's popular,
yeah,
or black-eyed children, those are modern creations. That's really what these things started being called with the advent of the internet, because, you know, people just wanted to attach some kind of a name to them. The way to find older accounts is to go back and look at things through the cultural lens of, you know, the people or the time period.
Right, right.
That you're investigating. And that's how I found a lot of the older stories, because they would identify them in different terms. You know, the story I referenced from 1950, they didn't refer to that as a black-eyed kid. You know, their belief was, this young man had met the devil. You know, so it was an incarnation of evil. Now, these were very simple, you know, farming community folks, and that's how they looked at these kind of things. It's a very black and white viewpoint. And, you know, that's what they said, and that's how the story carried forward.
Ah, okay. So there may be an underlying history to this that we haven't quite been able to unlock yet.
Absolutely. I think so. I spent time in China and found stories there. Now, you know, in Asia, they would refer to something like this as a hungry ghost. And that's how they would explain the appearance and its presence.
Hmm. This is the weirdness of it. Like you said, it touches on all these different possible paranormal genres. And what I thought was interesting too in the book is that, you know, you get one witness is positive it's a alien hybrid, then later another witness is absolutely positive it's a ghost,
right?
And it's like you can't, you say, you know, with the UFO phenomenon there's all these different possibilities. I always say, you know, it's probably all of the above. Part of me with these black-eyed kids feels like it's none of the above, that it's something, you know, wholly unique in a way that does share qualities with other paranormal things, but it seems pretty, you know, standalone.
Yeah, it has so many bizarre aspects. And, you know, to tell you the truth, when I started exploring the phenomena, one of the things that intrigued me about it so much was the fact that, you know, you could look at these things and argue, okay, they're alien hybrids, and this is, here's the argument for that. Or you could look at it and say, okay, there's some kind of, you know, there's some kind of a spirit, and here are the arguments for that. So it made it very intriguing and very puzzling all at the same time.
Right, right. And I thought it was, I've been kind of skeptics lately on the show, but I thought the story in the book about your encounter with the skeptic who just kept reaching and reaching and creating such an elaborate story behind what is behind these black eyed kids that it got to the point where it was like, dude, you're the one who's off the rocker here.
Right.
So, I mean, just to look at the skeptical point of view on this, it doesn't add up that this would be some kind of prank, or that, I mean, I guess prank is really the only possibility if you're a skeptic, you know, that this, the people are mistaken somehow, that they don't see the black eyes of the kids, and, you know, it doesn't quite add up.
Right. So, right. I think I covered that pretty thoroughly, and I looked at logical explanations to explain, you know, these things. But you can't really do it. It's just it's too much of a reach to try to place all of these encounters into some kind of a logical category.
Exactly. It's like, oh, maybe the kids have like a genetic abnormality, and you looked at that in the book, and it's like, if these kids had a genetic abnormality, they wouldn't really be running around knocking on doors and stuff, you know?
Right.
They'd need medical attention.
That's correct.
So they wouldn't be able to just function running around out in the streets because their eyes would be all messed up. They'd need, you know, help. So that doesn't add up either. So this is a very flummoxing topic. You know, after I put down the book, I had more questions than I had before I picked it up. So it's very weird. What I liked about the book in particular, again, I really hadn't heard too many stories. And as I'm reading the book, I'm sort of trying to find outliers or abnormalities. Okay, you know, I'm reading it and I'm like, okay, what have we not seen here from these reports that might tell us more about the phenomenon than, you know, we may think? But then as I'm going along in the book, the outliers start cropping up and canceling out these ideas that I had. And I'm talking about, you know, I thought to myself, okay, these seem to be one-off incidents. Well, then there's a story about a lady who kept seeing them. You know, and then I said to myself, well, has anyone touched them? Yes, there's a lady in the book who was touched by one of them. So, it you know, there's all kinds of incidents that happen that sort of break the mold a little bit of what we said earlier was the textbook experience.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because when I was researching and writing the book, the same thing sort of happened. You know, as an investigator, I always look for patterns. And, you know, I would start to look for patterns, and there really just weren't any. You know, there were no commonalities, for instance, amongst the victims for the most part. You know, this is just a wide range of ethnic background, religious belief, you know, and everything else in between.
Right.
And, you know, the same was true for, you know, looking at these accounts. Just when you think that, okay, this is what these accounts are like, this is pretty much what always happens, then something would come along that just sort of stepped outside that boundary.
Hmm.
And it would be completely different, yet the same. You know, the encounter would go the same, but then something weird and additional would happen. So it almost gives you the sense that whatever these beings are, that they're constantly adjusting and, you know, changing things ever so slightly. You know, some people have looked at these cases and said, you know, it gives you the sense that whatever these beings are, that they're experimenting or testing, you know, how far they can go and what they can get away with.
Right, right. Now, refresh my memory. The woman who was touched by the black-eyed kid, was she okay in the long run? Obviously, her hand didn't fall off or anything crazy like that, but...
No, it didn't. In the long run, she was okay, but, you know, she had some very unfortunate things that happened to her. You know, she became very ill. She suddenly lost her relationship. And there are a few other cases where people have either been touched or they've reached out and touched one of these kids. And it seems like that type of contact with these beings always causes some more difficult circumstances for the person who had the contact.
Okay. So don't touch them, folks.
No.
Oh, my God, these things are creepy. Did you, now, this is off the beaten path. I have other points here I want to return to, but you mentioned in the book people are, like, terrified to talk about these things, and they're afraid they're going to come back, and they're afraid that, you know, if you even discuss the black-eyed kids, they're going to kind of haunt you. And like I said, my friend Jason Offit was like, he doesn't even want to go near this stuff because he finds it too creepy and stuff. Have you had any sort of weird, you know, fallout from, because, I mean, you've probably devoted more time and energy to the black-eyed kids than anybody out there. So have you had any sort of weirdness befall you because of it?
Well, you know, you're probably going to love this. it's a bit of a long story, but I referenced it earlier when you and I were talking. Here's how it started. A couple of months after the book came out, I received an email. And it was from a woman who, you know, she started out, now don't think I'm crazy. When I see that in my inbox, you know, it's a 50-50.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, she was very rational. I spoke to her a number of times since then. She wrote me because she had purchased the book. She started reading it, and her smoke alarm went off. So, you know, she got up and she cut the smoke alarm off. She thought, okay, it's odd, but she didn't think anything else about it. Well, the next time she sat down to read the book, the timer on her oven went off, and she didn't even recognize the sound at first because she never uses it.
Right. Weird.
So the third time, the third incident was she was reading the book and her garage door opened itself. She put the book down. She went and wrote me this email and she said, look, I'm really interested in this, but I don't want any encounters. I just want to know if there's anything that indicates, you know, researching this too much or looking at it causes these things to come around, or if there's electronic interference associated with these kids. And, you know, at the time it was kind of intriguing. There had been a couple of incidents, that I had found while investigating of people who reported strange electronic things, sort of get into Men in Black territory there. But, you know, I talked to her a few times on the phone. I said, well, you know, nobody else has really reported anything like this, but, you know, please, you know, just keep me posted if anything else arises. Well, as I started to do interviews, after this, since the book was out, you know, I had people start reporting weird electronic things happening while we were conducting the interviews. And I was on Dreamland with Whitley Strieber, and he was kind of blown away. He said, I've never had this happen in my studio, but it's going crazy. And, you know, his studio was doing things like recording my voice and not his, or, you know, it was flipping all around.
How weird.
So, you know, these weird things started to, it seemed like they were associated with the black-eyed children. Well, as it continued to unfold, other things started to happen. Now, I got a phone call one day on my cell phone, and it was from a friend of mine who's also a paranormal investigator. He's in Kentucky. And I picked the phone up, and there's nothing there. It's just a lot of static. Set it aside, thought, okay, pocket dialed or whatever. Well, this continued to happen, and this started to happen several times a day. Day after day.
Oh,
I'd get these long
crazy
messages on my phone that were just background noise. I'm listening to them one of them one day, it's like 15 minutes long, and I'm hearing his kid in the background. I think, okay, there's the answer. His kid's getting a hold of his cell phone dialing my number. So I sent him an email and I said, hey man.
Quit calling me.
I think your kid's getting a hold of your phone and dialing my number, you know. So he looked at his phone and he said, yeah, it looks like that's happening. I apologize. It won't happen again. Of course it did. It continued to happen. And suddenly he sends me an email one day right after one of these calls, and he's kind of freaking out. He's like, oh, my God, I'm laying on my bed reading your book. My cell phone was on the bed beside me. No one was touching it. Out of my peripheral vision, I saw it light up. It was dialing your number.
Oh, God.
So... being a rational guy, he takes it to his cell phone provider the next day, and he said, you know, my phone is dialing this guy over and over. It's the only person this phone is doing this, you know, over and over and over again. This is the only number it's doing it with. Can you fix it? Can you explain it? They had no answers for him. It continued to happen periodically. It happened one final time. His phone was on the dash of his car. it lit up and dialed my number the day that he drove into Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
Not weird.
Which I'm sure you know.
Oh, yeah.
Home of the Mothman.
Yeah. Oh, my God. This thing is just so... This is such a bizarre story. This whole thing is just so weird.
The whole thing is, you know, and it's just, as the pieces get added in, it becomes stranger and stranger.
Exactly, exactly. That's a good jumping off point, because one of the stories, again, like you and I both were saying, you know, you look for trends and stuff, and then you find a story that kind of blows your mind here. And one of them was this guy's security guard, I think it was in Toronto, or Canada at least, security guard, night shift, places closed. He's sitting there. He says he brings magazines to read at night while he's working. The black-eyed kids show up at the door, and they're like, "We want to read your magazines." And there's like no way that these things should know that he had magazines in there unless they could somehow see in there with some kind of psychic ability of some kind. So
that's right, because he sits behind one of those high security counters. You know, they can just see over, and this building is, you know, it's secured, and they couldn't get in the front door. They wouldn't leave the door, and he, you know, went over there and had this conversation with them, and you know, they're insisting to come in and read his magazines, and it just kind of it greatly disturbed him. Now, that particular case, the foul odor did show up, and he's one of the people who said that, you know, he could not get rid of that smell. He kept washing his clothing over and over again, and it took quite some time for it to go away.
Weird. See, that's just, yeah, this thing is so odd. Now, one of the things, I laughed with you before we started the show, because right before we started talking, I came up with another question here, and that was this, have most of these stories, it seems like it's a sole person who sees the black-eyed kids. Have we, aside from the story of the kid in the backseat of the car, because I want you to tell that story from the get-go, but aside from that whole incident, have you heard of any stories with multiple witnesses to the black-eyed kids?
There are a few. They seem to be the exception. You know, most of the time these kids approach people that are alone, or it's very odd. They'll approach, you know, often when the other when other people are engaged somehow. You know, for instance, there was a case I received recently where they approached a hotel room, and, you know, they approached this hotel room, and it just so happened that there was a couple staying there, but one of them had literally just gotten in the shower when these kids showed up at the front door. So, you know, only one person saw the kids. Most of the time, that's what seems to happen. There are a few accounts where a second person will be present in the household and see these kids or have the experience. But no, for the most part, it's a single person.
Okay. All right. So we can kind of corral that a little bit, maybe.
Well, I think there's a reason for that. I think that's because the goal, I believe, of these beings is to create an intense level of fear in the victims. And the best way to do that, obviously, is when someone is by themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because it would be different if it was two people and the thing came, you know.
Right.
It would be a whole different sort of reaction. Now, I teased it here. Tell us the story, because, as I said earlier, the keystone to this is the invitation. And you have it, and of course, like I said, I'm reading the book, and it's always like, well, you know, the big question is what happens when you invite them in? And, you know, you do have a story of a situation like that that did unfold. So, you know, people love the story. So tell the story here for folks, you know, to when, and then after they pick their jaw up off the floor.
I saved that for late in the book, for obvious reasons.
Yeah. I don't want to give away the money shot here of the book, so feel free to, you know, give us the thumbnail version of it. But I think it's critical to the whole mystery, so.
Yeah, it's okay. Essentially, the short version of the story is a woman driving home. She has her 10-year-old son in the back seat of her SUV, and she stops by a convenience store, parks right up front, jumps out, leaving her child in the vehicle, and You know, some people might be critical of that, but this woman that's done this hundreds of times, she knows everybody in the neighborhood, you know.
Exactly. 1970 wouldn't be a big deal at all. It's a different era, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, she's jumped out. She's run in to get a couple of items, and only takes her a couple minutes. She comes back out on autopilot like a lot of us would be, jumps in that SUV, closing the door, putting the key in the ignition, and turning it as she's looking up in the rearview mirror. And there's this kid with solid black eyes staring in the mirror at her. He is sitting in the middle of the back seat directly beside her son. She has an automatic reaction of just intense fear, jumps out of the SUV, yanks her son out of the back seat, runs back in the store. Fast forward a little bit, there's a little bit of an exchange with the clerk inside the store who runs outside and sees nothing except for the SUV running with the doors open. She is too shaken up to get back in that vehicle and calls her husband, who is fairly close by. Does not tell him what has occurred. She gets him to switch vehicles. She takes his vehicle with her son, goes home. He gets in the SUV. A couple of miles away, he's in an accident and totals the vehicle. Now, the last thing he remembered, because he couldn't remember the accident, how it was caused or what happened, he said that he remembered an incredibly foul odor inside the SUV, that he couldn't understand what it was from or where it was coming from. The doctors kind of insisted that it must have been some kind of gas leak that caused him to pass out, but he's insistent that it did not smell like gas. Rather, it smelled like something rotting, so we hear that same thing again. The mother, the father ends up in the hospital. He does not have any serious injuries. He's kept for observation. The mother, meanwhile, is talking to her child, trying to determine exactly what went on here, and she's asking the questions that any parent would. She's saying, do you know that boy from school? And the response is, well, no, mommy, I don't know him. And she says, well, why did he get in our car? And the answer, which I think is kind of chilling, is the son replies, well, I asked him to get in, Mommy. I thought we could go to my house and play.
Weird.
So, you know, as this all unfolded, what had happened was that this black-eyed child showed up at the SUV, got an invitation out of this other child under the pretext that, you know, they could go and you know, play.
Right.
And, you know, this 10-year-old boy didn't see anything wrong with that, didn't know any better, obviously, and invited him in. So this child actually climbed over the 10-year-old into the back of the SUV and was sitting directly beside him. So a lot of close contact went on here. The result was that while the husband was okay from the accident, their child became ill. And they, of course, took him to the doctors. The doctors could not treat him because they couldn't lock down a diagnosis. Every time they thought they knew what was wrong with this boy, his symptoms would change somehow. So it became very extreme. You know, they thought at one point he had the flu. Something changed. They said, oh, no, he's got appendicitis. We're going to have to operate. Then he broke out in a rash, and they said, oh, no, he's got the measles. So this kept happening, and there was no way really to treat this child because they couldn't figure out what was wrong. The parents got kind of frustrated and they were still frightened. So they just ended up taking the child home, calling friends and family and constantly attending to this boy and focusing a lot of positive energy and prayer. And eventually he recovered. Now since then, you know, he's still in good health, but, both of the parents are just convinced that whatever they encountered that day was just something completely evil that almost took the life of their child as far as they're concerned.
Weird. So we have the invitation accepted here at this point in this story. So it's gives you, because one of the big things too about this is, I guess the part that makes it like super terrifying is we have no accounts of anyone beyond this story of anyone inviting them in, which leads you to think, well, you invite them in, you're done.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of a disturbing question that hangs in the air. I've only heard a small handful of stories that detail someone letting one of these kids into the home. And, that was the one story that I was actually able to interview those people and really follow up and verify the, the veracity of a lot of their claims. So, there's a couple of other accounts that are equally disturbing, but I just haven't been able to gather enough information on those to put them out there.
Okay. So there are other accounts, but we don't know enough about them really to...
Yeah, but it's a very small number.
Right.
And there's probably, five that have been presented to me, including the one that's in the book.
Okay. I'm tempted to ask you about those, but you just don't think they're ready to flesh out, I guess you could say?
Well, there's one... I'm not convinced of a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that I am convinced is a genuine. I can probably relate to you in brief fashion, and that's simply to protect the person who brought it to me.
That's fine.
This will be a first, I believe. I don't think I've talked about this before, but
awesome.
Essentially, I had a gentleman who. A woman who contacted me, and she told me that she and her husband had gotten hooked on listening to podcasts of this particular paranormal show, and they were going through listening to all the different episodes. Her brother was staying with them, who was a veteran of the Iraqi conflict, and he kind of razzed them. He thought it was nonsense until the day. Then he came out of the kitchen and heard an episode about the Black Eyed Children that I had been interviewed on. He was just walked in as one of the accounts was being told and dropped his coffee. It shattered on the floor. She said she had never seen her brother react that way. He left the room. Took her a while to get him to fess up, essentially, as to what had, freaked him out so much. And eventually she was able to convince him to call me, and I've had a number of conversations with him. His story is that he encountered one of these kids in Iraq, and that the soldiers that were with him who also encountered this child, out of all the people there, he was the only one that made it back from the conflict.
Oh, God.
So it's a very disturbing story. Obviously, I can't go into any more details about it at this point because he simply, he didn't want
right.
anything that would potentially reveal his identity or the identity of these soldiers who were, tragically killed in the conflict.
Now, let me just ask this. We don't want to give out, obviously you don't want to get too deep into this, but did their depths result from the encounter with the black-eyed kid, or was it sort of like they had the encounter and then, over the course of their term over there, these guys just dropped,
Well, that's the real question, isn't it? I mean, he is convinced that, this black-eyed child somehow cursed them.
Hmm.
Now, we can argue this a lot of different ways and say, okay, well, this is some weird, coincidence or synchronicity that occurred. Maybe he believes this because of the stress of what happened in the conflict because, God knows those soldiers have went through so much,
Yeah.
So it's really hard to determine. I don't really believe in coincidence. I believe in synchronicity. So, whether this child caused this to happen or whether he was just an omen of things to come. Because there are some cases that indicate that these things simply could turn up as an indicator that unfortunate things are coming, coming soon.
Right, right. But I guess what I mean is, they didn't invite him into the barracks, and then all of a sudden, within an hour, all of them were lying on the floor dead or anything like that.
No. It took a little bit of time for this to unfold, and it was... Yeah, I won't reveal the location, but it was not in a barracks. No.
Okay. Yeah, that was just a joke. I was just trying.
I mean it wasn't on base or anything. It was a very close encounter with the child, though, is what I'll leave it at.
Okay. Strange. Well, that's the frightening scenario here, where the only way we were going to learn more about these things is for some brave brave and maybe stupid person to invite them into their home or invite them in to play. So I don't necessarily encourage it, but I'm also, you know, endorsed shooting Bigfoot before. So, you know, we need some crazy asshole to be like, yeah, come on in. So if you're out there, whoever you are, good luck. And, write to us if you do it. I will not do it, and I really kind of don't think anyone should, but, you know, maybe someone out there will, and if they do, awesome. Let's find out what happens.
I'm sure that somebody given the opportunity would. You know, I get emails all the time saying, you know, how do I get them to come to my house and things like
that. Oh, God. Well, it's interesting. You know, I said earlier, part of me sort of nixes a lot of these possibilities and embraces sort of a none of the above thing because, you know, they have elements of things in the paranormal, but then they don't sort of adhere to the overall milieu of that specific thing. Like, for instance, they sound kind of like Men in Black, but they don't behave like the Men in Black.
No, but, you know, there are similarities.
That's what I mean.
Which is really odd. I mean, obviously, they're not men. But, you know, here's a few of the similarities with that. For instance, we have this whole electronic phenomena that seems to be associated with their appearance. And that's very common in Men in Black accounts. There's also the fact that people almost always describe these kids as having very pale or pasty skin. Some people say the skin looks artificial. And, you know, here's something, and I don't remember if I put this in the book or not, but out of all the cases, you know, I always ask people a variety of questions. No one has ever noticed any kind of blemish on the skin of these kids. Now, we're talking about kids that average, you know, in the preteen or teenage years. You would expect, you know, acne, pimples, freckles, something. Hmm. No one ever sees anything like that. Nothing. So, you know, it's kind of bizarre. They seem to be a little bit confused by some modern things. You know, again, given the age of these kids, if they were normal kids, even if they were kids trying to perpetrate a hoax, you would expect to see iPods or cell phones or, you know, something like that. No one's ever seen anything like that on any of these kids. You know, they've never seen one wearing a watch. They never use a damn doorbell. And here's a great case that came to me recently, you know, this lady wrote, and her encounter was kind of typical, except for the beginning when she was home alone. She was very busy, very focused on doing something. And she said this knocking started, that, you know, she termed it this infernal knocking, you know, it's just long, steady knock. And she got really angry for some reason. The result was that she went to the door, flung the door open. Before these kids could even say anything, she pointed at the doorbell and said, "Why don't you use the damn doorbell?" And she said the response was that they looked at the little lip button, they looked at her, and they looked back at the button, just back and forth, as if they had no idea what she was talking about.
Weird. Did they then go right into their routine?
They went into their routine.
Weird.
You know, they just wanted to be invited in and, you know.
See, I feel like that would be my situation in a way. I feel like I'd fling the door open and be like, "Get the hell out of here. I don't care what you want." You know, maybe I would put the scare into them first. So,
I'll fling the door open and hand them a fork and close the door.
Exactly. And like you said, you know, they have the elements of all the different stuff, but they don't quite fit into any of the categories. Like, just when you think it might be one thing, you know, with the Men in Black, they talk like, you know, obviously they're sort of stilted, but they have conversations. Like, these kids seem to have just one, like I said, routine that they go through. They don't quite open up like a Men in Black.
Right. It's not quite the same. Although, you know, the speech is usually described as being very monotone. They seem to have a limited number of phrases in any given encounter that they just sort of default back to and will repeat, you know, so they won't really respond to questions. You know, a lot of people typically will ask them, you know, are you hurt or where are your parents, you know, things like that. And instead of directly answering, they'll just, you know, they'll rebuttal with something they've already said, you know, well, just, you know, we won't take long, just ask us in and things like that.
Oh, God. Imagine if it actually turns out it's a good thing. Like, we're going to get a call from somebody who's like, you know, I invited them in, and actually they gave me 3 wishes. like a Prince and the Pauper kind of thing going on that we don't actually know about yet.
Yeah, see, I'd be suspicious of someone coming along and granting me 3 wishes. That gets into djinn territory.
Exactly, yeah. Well, maybe they're like angels or something. They give you a bunch of gold or something. Who knows? I'm just trying to talk some listener into letting them in. That's all. Oh, my God. Now, we heard the story about the kid in the backseat of the car who invited the black-eyed kid into the car. Have we heard any other stories about encounters between children and the black-eyed kids? Because you'd think that there might be something interesting there.
No, you know, that's pretty rare. There have only been a couple of cases where a child was present. That's the only one that has come my way where it was a solitary child encountering a black-eyed child. There have been another one or two cases where a single parent, you know, their child may have been present in the house when one of these black-eyed kids showed up, but I haven't seen anything else like that. Equally rare are encounters wherein an animal is present, a pet. Now, there is one that it showed up on my blog because it was a case that came to me after the book was already published. But I think it's one of the creepiest encounters, I think. And what happened with this case was a man in the Dallas, Texas area. He came home from the grocery store. He walked up to his front door, and, you know, he had a couple of bags in his hands. He reached up, and he opened the door. And just as he was opening it, he suddenly realizes there's this kid standing on the ground by the steps. And, you know, it kind of startled him because obviously he didn't see this child when he walked up to the door, so it's as if this kid just appeared. And he turns and looks at this boy who says to him, "Is it food time?"
Oh, Jesus.
And he was so just taken aback and startled that he said that he couldn't really bring himself to respond. He's just kind of locked on, you know, staring at this kid. He said he felt almost entranced, you know. Now, his front door has swung open. His home has solid wood floors. He has a long hallway that goes from the front door back to the living room. And he said that he heard his pit bull in the back of the house barking, getting closer. So he sort of glances into the door, and he sees that pit bull turn the corner in the living room, charging down the hallway towards the front door.
Oh, boy.
This dog made it almost to the front door when it suddenly put the brakes on. Now, you know, Tim, this is a whole Scooby-Doo thing. This dog, you know, sliding on this wood floor, literally tumbled over itself onto the steps, jumped up as quick as it could with its head down, tail between its legs, whining, running back in the house. You know, this was enough for this guy. He jumped in the door and slammed the door on this kid, went in to find that his pit bull, three-year-old pit bull, was hiding under the bed in the master bedroom.
Oh, boy, this isn't a poodle we're talking about either. It's a pit bull.
No, this is a pit bull that he raised from a pup to be a guard dog. He has witnessed this pit bull kill rattlesnakes, never seen it back down from anything, and all of a sudden it is terrified. He says that this dog has not been the same since that encounter. It's simply a different animal. Now, you know, this is a very intriguing encounter for a lot of reasons. You know, we don't have many accounts, as I said, of an animal being present when one of these things shows up. And, you know, we know that animals have a different level of sensitivity. So, you know, this dog, while it behaved normally at first, when it got within range of that kid, it completely changed its demeanor, and it has somehow altered this animal, it seems, permanently.
Oh, God. This thing is so strange. Now, what about in the book you have a story of a lady who had an encounter. She goes to a psychic. The psychic, obviously she doesn't tell the psychic about the encounter. The psychic comes upon the encounter through her psychicness, let's say. And I, you know, I'm pretty skeptical about psychics in general, but I feel like it's maybe an area that could be cultivated, I guess, just for some additional insights. Not necessarily that we're going to put all our stock in what some psychic says, but maybe we'll get some more thoughts. Have anyone reached out to you who's a psychic who claims to be having psychic abilities that have an idea what these things are?
Yeah, there's been a few, but none that have really...
Wowed you?
I don't feel like any of them have really, you know, hit on what's going on here.
Okay.
I get a lot of communications like that, and they tend to be in very general terms, you know. Oh, they're spirits of evil, or, you know, things like that. Well,
right.
You know, I don't... they're not really demonstrating anything to me. You know, it was interesting because I tried to talk with that psychic who is mentioned in the book, and she didn't want anything to do with this topic at all. She just absolutely refused to even broach it with me. So, you know, it could be an interesting avenue to look at. A lot of other people researching these kids at this point, so maybe somebody will pursue that avenue and bring us some additional information. It was very interesting in that particular account that, you know, this woman, as you said, she didn't tell her anything about this encounter, but the psychic certainly picked up on it right away, and you know, she sent this woman along her way because she didn't want anywhere near this, whatever this phenomena is.
Right, right. Yeah, I just thought it might be interesting to see if, like I said, I don't trust most of what they say, but you never know. Someone might have some insights, you know. Now, one thing that stood out to me, and you didn't get into the story in the book, but you tangentially mentioned it at the beginning. Obviously, you talk about the skeptics, you talk about the people who will be skeptical of this whole phenomenon and stuff, and they say, you know, well, where are the pictures? Where's the video? And you mentioned that there's some video of one of these encounters, but it just shows the person talking to thin air. Tell me more about that, because it wasn't fleshed out really in the book.
Yeah, there's a couple of there's a few occasions wherein there have been security cameras present when the person had the encounter with these kids, and for the most part, you know, what always seems to happen is that there's a malfunction with the camera. Or, you know, there would just be a glitch in time. The cameras would be shut off. There's a whole wide variety of things. And, you know, that kind of goes back into the electronic interference again. You know, we don't know why that's happening. But, you know, it certainly adds to the enigma. And, you know, maybe eventually, I don't put a whole lot of stock in the photographs anyway, because
right,
it's so easy to digitally manipulate something like that in a couple of minutes. And, you know, it's the old adage that a photograph's not going to convince a skeptic, and, you know, a believer doesn't need one.
Ah, I've never heard that before, but I like it.
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of not as relevant. It becomes curious to me when these encounters unfold, and something goes awry with technology that could potentially capture them. That I find very intriguing.
What about the story in the book that you mentioned that the video shows the person talking to thin air?
Yeah, there's a couple of those. You know, there was one that was captured where this person supposedly encountered one of these kids in a elevator and, you know, had this exchange. And when the security footage was examined, it's just a person standing there seemingly talking to themselves.
Odd.
Yeah, it's yet again another part of the puzzle that, you know, sort of maybe points in some different directions, but we just don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to really – this thing is so difficult to pin down that it's really mind-boggling. You know, because that sounds like a ghostly type thing. Who knows? You know, it's weird.
Right.
It's so weird. Part of me feels like if I had to really sort of make a determination, I feel like we're dealing with some kind of, like, elemental being. Not necessarily like a fairy or you know, or a gnome or something like that, but something within that species of or family of creatures, some kind of elemental. That's just my general sort of thinking as I read more about this.
Yeah, that's kind of in keeping with my personal view. I, you know, as you probably noticed when I wrote the book, I didn't push any particular agenda.
Right.
I, you know, presented all these different cases and possibilities to explain what these things are, but I really wanted people to make up their own minds. And it's funny, you know, when the book came out, I I got a call almost immediately from someone who had read it, and they said, I loved your book. You've convinced me they're alien hybrids. And, you know, I got off the phone. I thought, oh, my God, I I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to convince anybody of this. And, you know, within a couple of days, I had another person contact me and say, I loved your book. You've convinced me they're demons. So it brought a smile on my face. I was like, okay, I did what I set out to do, you know. but yeah, my personal viewpoint on it is that it's kind of in keeping in what you're talking about. I believe that they are some type of interdimensional being that is sort of coming over into our level of existence, you know, with their own agenda. And that's in keeping with a lot of different, you know, fairies and things. I almost hesitate to use that word because people have such a misconception of what fairies are.
Right. But, that's why I, yeah, same here. That's why I.
Yeah. But they're, you know, really, if you go to tribal cultures around the world, you'll find this tradition is very common of these beings that used to live on our level of existence, and they left. You know, they went through a shimmering doorway or a portal or whatnot, and, you know, they still have the ability to come back over here if they choose to.
Makes you wonder why they're coming in now. It's very weird.
Yeah, well, you know, I think a lot of things are happening. I mean, we survived 2012 despite the media's hype that the world was going to end. And, you know, all along, you know, all these various elders from around the world have said, no, it's not the end of the world. It's a new cycle that we're beginning. And, you know, that's causing a lot of changes. It's causing people to be more aware. It has caused the veil to thin a bit. You know, and even from a scientific viewpoint, we're exploring things now that are sort of opening us to new possibilities. You know, I briefly mentioned this idea of other dimensions. Native cultures have been talking about that for, you know, millennia, and now we've got scientists officially announcing, oh, we've determined there are other dimensions. We don't know where they are or how to get to them, but we know they're there. So, you know, the more quantum science digs into these things, the more interesting it's going to be as that new scientific viewpoint sort of collides with ancient shamanic traditions.
Hmm. Almost makes you wonder if we're opening a door we shouldn't be opening in the first place, you know.
Well, I think it's already happened.
Yeah. Well, we don't want some scientists somewhere to make this portal and let all these things in. But
no, we don't want it under government control either.
No, absolutely not. They'll slap a toll on that thing.
All right.
yeah, this is it's weird. It definitely feels like also this. You know, we talked about how this thing probably has some more historical roots than we think, but it definitely feels like this is a sort of a modern phenomenon in a way. As far as sort of it's been fueled by the internet. Like I said, like kind of like the shadow people thing.
Right.
In a way, it's kind of like an interesting dynamic where it's like the internet not only has made all this communication better, but now we're finding out about new mysteries that we hadn't really ever thought about or hadn't really all put the pieces together about.
Right, and we have to start to question, you know, what that's doing in, you know, how that's interacting with the phenomena that's out there. Is it co-creating it somehow? Because then, you know, then you get into areas like the Tulpa, and, you know, that's that's an intriguing possibility when you're looking at some of these things. I mean, I'm sure you know the Slender Man story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the Slender Man essentially by all evidence started out simply as, you know, an internet creation. But there are, you know, dozens and dozens of people now who will swear to you that they have encountered this being. So is that our potential, you know, tapping into something energetically and co-creating these things into our level of existence? It's kind of a disturbing question.
Come play with us. play with us, Daddy?
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Forever and ever and ever.